Hello, Kartik. This is World Soccer Talk Podcast, and my name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer. Kartik, it's been a long time, but how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. It's great to be with you as we begin this new chapter in the World Soccer Talk Podcast and the evolution of the podcast.
Yeah, it's a bit ironic, too, because I mean, I started it, the first one, which was back in, I think, 2006. It's been like 10 years, basically, so it's been a long time since I've hosted it, and for those who don't know, I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I run World Soccer Talk. If you're listening to this podcast, we've changed formats, and there's been a big reason for that. I mean, the Premier League analysis and reviews that Nipun, Kartik, yourself, Chris, Morgan, and many others have done have been great, have been top class. We thought it was time for a change, basically to mix things up a bit and change the format and make it one of our own. So we've got, basically, it's going to be media analysis, media discussion of everything about talking about how to watch soccer online on TV. We're going to be covering Fox, NBC, ESPN, beIN Sports, One World Sports, and also kind of focusing more on world soccer rather than just the Premier League. So we're going to be talking about a ton of leagues, both in the United States, around the world, and also the coverage. So, Kartik, since this is basically kind of a reboot of the World Soccer Talk podcast, I think it's probably easier just to start off with this one being episode one. We've probably, in the 10 years that we've been doing this podcast, we're probably up into definitely the high hundreds, maybe even into the thousands of episodes. So, what we're going to start off with, Kartik, is just kind of having a discussion about what we've been watching, just to kind of to share with the listeners. What matches and what programming from soccer we've seen on whether television, YouTube, online, etc. So Kartik, let's have you kick it off and let's see what you've been watching this past week or two.
Well, I've watched this incredible video on Kick TV about the Kingston Stockade, which is a fourth division club here in the United States, an NPSL club that just completed their first season, and they were founded exactly a year ago, basically November of 2015. The chairman of the club is Dennis Crowley, who is the founder of Foursquare. He's brought a fourth division club to his local town, Kingston, New York. Not a big place, a place with, I think, about 30,000 people, kind of your everyday American town. Metropolitan area probably has 150,000, 200,000 people. And they have created this cool vibe, this community vibe. The town all comes out for the football match or the soccer match. The way American high school football is revered and is kind of towns revolve around it in the southern U.S. and here in Florida and in Texas and Oklahoma and states like that. Just really cool to watch. And there's so many neat things happening in the fourth division of American soccer between Kingston Stockade, who we're talking about, and encourage everybody to watch the video, Detroit City, FC, Grand Rapids, Chattanooga. I don't want to leave anyone out, so I'll just stop there. But there are a lot of really cool stories. And quite frankly, I'm at the point where if I want to support a local club, I want to support a fourth division club. I think there's just a lot more organic coolness to it than the second and third divisions in this country, quite frankly. So really enjoyed this video, really enjoyed following the Kingston Stockade story and everything going on in NPSL and PDL and the local regional leagues down at the fourth division level.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but it definitely looks interesting. For those listeners, myself included, we're wondering, where is Kingston Stockade in the U.S., where geographically?
Kingston is probably about midway between Albany and New York City, just off the Hudson River. It's maybe it's a little closer to Albany. So it's as you head upstate. It's not that far from New York City, maybe 80 miles, 90 miles from New York, something like that, maybe 70, 80, 90 miles from Albany. So it's if you envision taking the New York State Thruway, if you cross the Tappan Zee Bridge and you go up I-87 towards Albany from the Bronx, from New York, Bronx where New York City FC plays, you're going to be near Kingston at some point, midway through that drive.
Yeah, and as far as what I've been watching this past week, last week it was the Champions League, of course, but My personal favorite when I watch the Champions League, since my team's not in it, far from it, which is Swansea. But I really enjoy watching Multi-Match 90 on whether it's on Fox Soccer Plus or Fox Soccer To Go. And I think it's one of those almost like diamonds in the rough. Not a lot of people know about it. It's a whip around coverage of the Champions League. It's live, hosted by Ross Dyer. And he does a really fantastic job of taking you from match to match to match as goals go in, or corner kicks, free kicks, just kind of key incidents. And for me, it really kind of heightens my experience of watching the Champions League. And I think last week's was a perfect example of it was Legia Warsaw was playing Real Madrid. And that's a match that normally, if I'm watching it traditionally, I wouldn't be watching. I'd probably be watching, I don't know, whatever was on FS1 or FS2 at the time. And that was the Warsaw-Real Madrid game. What a game. Back and forth. Warsaw went ahead to, I think 2-0 or something like that. Real Madrid pulled it back. Just an incredible finish. But the Multi-Match 90 format is absolutely perfect because you can guarantee you're not missing any of the goals, any of the action. And for me, I mean, I'm a World Soccer fan, as you are, Kartik, and I'm sure the listeners are too. But it just heightens my experience and heightens my appreciation of what's happening in some of the matches that maybe I wouldn't follow as much before. And also kind of just watching, of course, the Man City-Barcelona game. But then maybe there's the spells in that game where it's a little bit, maybe in the first half, a little bit quieter, and going over to watch the Arsenal game or whichever game it is. But I really, really enjoy it. And I think that's something that most people don't know that much about. But if you do get a chance to watch it, I'd highly recommend it. So, Kartik, anything else you've been watching? How about Major League Soccer?
I watched all the playoffs, right? I've watched everything thus far. Well, I shouldn't say I've watched everything. I did not watch the Eastern Conference games in the play-in round, if you want to call it that, the 3-6 and 4-5 round, but watched the both the Western Conference games in that round and the four games both Sundays, so the last 10 of the 12 MLS playoff games, and I've been pleased with the coverage. I think Fox has stepped up, which they tend to do around MLS and around events which don't involve a heavy analysis of European football or some degree of balance and national team thing. The U.S.-Mexico game could be horrifying, but I'm sure we'll talk about that next week. That's on FS1. I mean, you're taking Taylor Twellman away from me for that game, which is unfortunate. So I hope whoever Fox has calling the game steps up. But let's talk about MLS first. I thought they did a very good job in their coverage both weekends. A little bit of a mixed bag as far as the games. Fox got both legs of Seattle, Dallas, and it got away from Dallas with the Mauro Diaz injury, and obviously Fabian Castillo got sold to Galatasaray or Fenerbahce, one of them, and one of the Turkish clubs, midway through the season or during the summer transfer window. So a weakened Dallas team, a team that is one of the best teams I've seen in MLS in the last decade. Just that injury to Diaz and sale of Castillo killed them. So that hurt Fox a little bit because there wasn't much suspense around those two legs. Now, they had ESPN had this second leg of the Colorado LA Galaxy series on Sunday with John Champion and Ali Marino. John Champion taking a weekend off from calling the Premier League and English Championship games, EFL games, this weekend to join ESPN for MLS playoff coverage, and it was a good broadcast, a good game. Gashi had a great goal. Kind of saw how tired and old the LA Galaxy got at the end of that game. I thought Ashley Cole was still pretty good, even though he missed his penalty kick. But boy, the rest of the team, Donovan had to come off at halftime. He couldn't go any further. Keane looked old and slow. Gerrard looked old. Larenovic came on. Larenovic is in his 30s. Yeah, he came on. He didn't look very electric. Mike McGee's in his 30s. He didn't look very good. So maybe Bruce Arena's strategy of employing all these 30-somethings really caught up with them in the postseason. Gilles Van Damme and Ashley Cole are in their 30s also, obviously, but they're both defenders, so they don't have to do as much running. So that was unfortunate, I guess, for LA. And I thought ESPN did a very credible job with the Montreal-New York's Red Bull game, with Taylor Twellman and Adrian Healy, as always. But New York was pretty poor in that game, and then they had this bleed where they had to start that game on ESPN2 because the Colorado Galaxy game went to extra time. New York City FC and Toronto was on Fox, was on FS1, and Fox got a stinker. It was unfortunate. You know, it's the bad luck of the draw with these MLS playoffs. That was a 5-0 game and 8-0 on, or 7-0 on aggregate. So very very unfortunate for FS1 that they got that series.
Yeah, and a little bit later on too, we'll talk about the New York teams exiting the MLS Cup conference chase. And what impact that's going to have on TV ratings, which is going to be a big one, a big hit for Fox. Yeah. So one more thing, Kartik, from my side, in terms of some of the things I've been watching. I've been watching the Fantasy Premier League show, which is it's on the NBC Sports app, and also it's on the website NBCSports.com, and I enjoy it. I play it, Fantasy Premier League, not hardcore, not as much as I used to. But I actually enjoy watching it a little bit for the entertainment value. I mean, it's hosted by James Richardson from the Guardian podcast, and also has Mark Southers, I believe his name is, from Fantasy Football Scout. It's interesting to watch, even if you're not a fantasy Premier League player, I think. There's a lot of very stats-driven, a lot of interesting insights, some things that you probably wouldn't necessarily hear about on a normal broadcast, but I enjoy it. I think, Kartik, anything else you've been watching?
Well, I guess I watched the NASL playoffs on One World Sports, the New York Cosmos and Rio OKC. I like One World Sports production. I think they do a pretty good job, but I am a contractor. I mean, I've spent almost every day in an office of an NASL team, and I didn't know what network the game was on, which I guess is my fault. I mean, if I had been paying attention the week, I would have known. But it's very confusing, the NASL's TV deal. I at the beginning of the season had editorialized it. I thought it was a great deal, and they could put a lot of pressure on MLS with these TV deals. That has proven not to be the case, and it's actually created a lot of confusion for myself and fans, where games are, what network, what time. It just continues into the postseason. And the final, I now know, is on CBS Sports Network on Sunday at 7 or 8 p.m. And that's not great either, because CBS Sports Network doesn't have a streaming platform that goes with it, which is is something that I had not thought about before the season when I had editorialized on World Soccer Talk that this is a great deal for MLS. Well, you know, for NASL, you know, MLS, all of their media partners have streaming components, and they also have this thing where they put highlights up right away. So if Jovinko scores in the 20th minute, by the time you get to the 30th minute and you go to the MLS app or MLS website, that clip is up. Even if you're not watching the game live, you see it pretty soon after. NASL doesn't have that capability, and so these games that are on CBS, you just if you're not in front of the TV with CBS, you miss them. It's as simple as that. And it's the CBS Sports Network, of course, I'm referring to, not CBS over the air.
Yeah, and that's one of the things too in terms of World Soccer Talk. One of the reasons that we're doing this podcast too, kind of on a soccer TV media online discussion points, is that the website definitely goes more into TV schedules now than we've ever done. So the NASL, from first-hand experience, a lot of it is kind of just a few days before the match is before it's finalized. So I think for the final, it had a kind of a whole bunch of just scenarios. So if the Cosmos went through to the final, it would be on this network. If it was Edmonton, it was going to be on this network. All these different scenarios, and then basically, depending on who made it into the final, we then determine where those matches would be shown. But it's a shame, to a certain extent, it is confusing. You have to kind of stay on top of it. But I think they lose out in the end in terms of if we knew that every game was going to be on ESPN3, no matter what, it definitely would be easier to find. Okay, Kartik, so let's move on now to the next segment, which is TV streaming news. We're going to kind of run through these pretty quickly, but we wanted to kind of make sure that our listeners know kind of what's happening within the soccer TV watching and streaming world and all the options that are available. And I'll start off too. And that's the big news, that DirecTV is going to be launching its own streaming product. Dish has their Sling TV product, which you don't have to be a Dish Network subscriber to get. You can just get it. You can cut the cord and watch it. Well, DirecTV is going to do the same thing too. So in November, they're launching a product called DirecTV Now. It's a streaming product. It's going to be $35 a month, and it's supposed to have 100 channels. What we don't know yet is what those 100 channels are. We can basically kind of guess that we would think that you would have Fox on there and ESPN, but we won't know until it's announced, as well as NBC. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but it'll be another player in the market. DirecTV Now is definitely going to compete against your PlayStation View, your Sling TVs, kind of one of those kind of big streaming packages where if you want to watch HBO and AMC and any all your soccer networks, you're going to have more choices out there. So hopefully they'll create a price war, and hopefully at the end of the day, we consumers and we soccer fans will be the ones to gain from that. And then Kartik, do you want to cover the next topic?
Yeah, so it's unfortunate. It's a sign of the times, right? And we're going to get more into this in the show, but 41% of satellite TV and cable customers, satellite / cable, because obviously DirecTV satellite, if you have UVerse, you have cable or internet cable, whatever you want to describe it as. But subscription-based satellite or TV customers are planning to cut back. It's very expensive cable bills, and as more and more people cut the cord, the prices for cable and satellite services are going up. And because there's no a la carte cable option, from most cable companies, from all of them, basically, except I believe Verizon Fios has some degree of a la carte, but you have to buy packages, right? Customers are planning to cut back, drop tiers if they have a sports pack or movie pack or whatever. Get rid of HBO, get rid of Showtime, get rid of networks like BN, CBS Sports Network, those sorts of additional channels. And then maybe eventually just cut the cord completely.
Yeah, and in the next news item, PlayStation View, speaking of a streaming product, they just added support this past week for Macintosh and PC. So now you can run PlayStation View on your desktop or laptop. Previously, it was only available on, well, PlayStation View, the actual gaming device, but also Roku. I believe Apple TV, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically you were able to kind of watch it on a select number of apps and devices, your phones, of course, and your smart tablets, and but now it's available on PCs and Macs. And then Kartik, I think Disney and Fox, I'm not sure if you've heard this news, but they're...
Yeah, about Hulu. That's... That's interesting because a lot of people use the Hulu service. I do to watch my wife does to watch television shows. I do to watch movies. Although it seems like the same movies Hulu has or that they rotate through the movies Amazon Prime's rotating through. So I think there's a service that provides to both Amazon and to Hulu. But certainly there's a possibility that the FS1, FS2, ESPN1, and ESPN2, and maybe ESPN. You are going to be provided to Hulu, from what I've been reading.
Yeah, it should be an interesting. It just seems that everyone at this point is, if they're not already have a product out there, they're quickly trying to put one together that's going to be a streaming product. And it looks like Hulu is going to be adding Disney, which is going to be include the ESPN family of channels and Fox. So you're probably looking at FS1, FS2. So for those people who can't get FS2 right now, that could be a good option to consider as far as Hulu in the near future. I don't think a date has been announced about that. And then last but not least, just this past week, Fox Sports Go, which is the free streaming product platform from Fox. This is different than Fox Soccer to Go, which is their kind of the cord cutters solution. But Fox Sports Go, you have to have a TV subscription in order to actually watch the matches. or watch the programming. But they just added a whole bunch of new viewing options, very similar to ESPN3 with the Mosaic, where you can kind of watch four streams at once. They've added that. They've also added picture-in-picture, as well as dual viewing. So if you want to view side-by-side and have, you know, Italy, Germany on one side and England, Spain on the other side, a couple of friendlies that are coming up that are going to be played at the same time. Actually, if both of those games are on Fox, which I don't, I think one of them is. Anyway, but hypothetically, so basically you can have matches side-by-side. Now, Kartik, on to the next segment, and we're going to talk about TV ratings, and specifically soccer TV ratings. The big news from this past week is Club America and Chivas had the most viewed Copa MX match on U.S. television ever. It had 1.4 million people that tuned in to watch the game, and Chivas won this one, which is, I think the second El Super Clásico they've won in a row, so definitely dealt a big blow to Club America. But 1.4 million people, which is the most watched game on U.S. soccer, U.S. television for soccer this past week. And then in other news too, for the knockout round of Major League Soccer, so this wouldn't include the most recent matches from this past weekend, the conference semifinals, but ratings are down 10% compared to last year. We'll have to wait and see how the conference semifinals, the second legs this past weekend, did it in the TV ratings. And we'll find that out later this week. And we'll be sure to report those numbers at worldsoccertalk.com once those come out. But Kartik, the big question or the big concern here, and we kind of alluded to it a few minutes ago, is the New York teams, both NYCFC and the Red Bulls, well, New Jersey, but Red Bulls are out of the MLS Cup. And with New York being the number one TV market in the United States, do you think, how much of a blow is this to Major League Soccer in terms of potential TV ratings bonanza? And do you think there's any concern here?
Doesn't matter. I mean, they think it matters. I have had people from MLS tell me they wanted a New York LA final, but I don't think it matters. What does matter is if they have a Canadian team in the final, which they will now. So that's a bigger concern. I think any U.S. team draws. Look, there are more people who want to watch Real Salt Lake on television in that market than want to watch Los Angeles in their market. There are more people who want to watch Orlando or Columbus in their markets. Columbus, it's a very small TV market, so maybe Columbus and Salt Lake are bad examples. There are more people who want to watch Orlando in their television market, and more people who want to watch Portland and Seattle in their television markets, and Kansas City in their television market than want to watch those New York teams or LA in their markets. So MLS wants to be a big player. They want to create a splash. They want New York versus LA. They want the star power that gives them. Maybe it gives them more over overseas, right? Because they would have had Gerrard versus a Lampard or Bradley Wright Phillips, who's a known player if it's the other New York, Pirlo, David Villa, those kinds of players. But I think for U.S. television, it really makes the kind of difference they think it does.
Yeah. I mean, the challenge for Major League Soccer too is it's very much a regional league in terms of, you know, I mean, if there are, you mean, so basically kind of if Colorado makes it into the final against Toronto, kind of a rerun of the 2010 final, you know, I mean, Colorado fans, yeah, they'll be interested in watching the match, but nationwide, yes, there'll be interest in Tim Howard, but on a nationwide side of things, are people going to tune in to watch that one? And with it being Toronto, even if there are a couple of star US players, are people going to be bothered enough to want to tune in to that? And on a local level, in terms of attendance-wise, you mean whether it's Toronto getting some great crowds, that's no problem. But on a nationwide or basically not even just nationwide, but on a continental basis, on Canada and North America, essentially, that is a challenge to kind of get people to say, okay, well, I'm going to tune in to watch this match because I just enjoy watching Colorado against Toronto. Versus the Premier League, where it's, you know, I mean, well, even if it's, I don't know, Hull City against Sunderland, you still might tune in to watch that just because it's, you mean, there's the whole relegation kind of scenario with both teams, actually. There's always kind of something interesting there, and you're probably going to get more people, if the match is more meaningful or whatever it may be, but the viewing figure for a match like that could be greater, probably would be greater than a semi-final. So MLS Cup, not because MLS Cup is going to be on Big Fox, but it's a challenge for MLS, really. It's especially with the New York teams, I think, being out of the market. I think more so, Kartik, I think it's more about media in terms of newspapers, TV coverage, newspaper coverage, having New York teams playing in a kind of a competitive semifinal or final could definitely give them some more exposure versus, the Canadian teams is going to be a tough sell.
I mean, I think they if they had had this situation where DC had gone through and Philadelphia had gone through, they would have had actually an entirely Eastern Seaboard, the Acela line playoff series, right? It could have been actually kind of interesting. But and it ended up being DC Philly in the conference finals. I don't think they'd be sweating it as much. It's having the two Canadian teams, which is an issue. And again, this is an issue across border leagues. And there are people, I noticed Bob Williams from the Telegraph today tweeting, how absurd would it be if Montreal wins the MLS Cup because they won't be in CONCACAF Champions Leagues and all these teams they would have gotten past would be? Well, that's because they're a guest team and the slots go to each country, as they do in Europe, too, from UEFA. So, as you know, as a Swansea City supporter, you have to qualify via an English slot. Now, Montreal actually has a mechanism to qualify via a Canadian slot through the Canadian Cup, which means they cannot qualify via an American spot because they've opted for that. So Toronto qualified or Vancouver qualified this year from that. So basically, they're out. Excuse me, did Toronto win it this year? Maybe Toronto won. Montreal did not win it, is being the point. So they're not going to they're not going to be in Champions League next year, and they could possibly win MLS Cup, whereas Dallas is in because they won the Open Cup and they won the Supporters Shield, so they qualified on two things. Colorado, I think, makes it because they end up getting Supporters Shield because Dallas qualified from Open Cup. New York Red Bull will be in, and then there'll be one other MLS team, either Seattle or New York City FC, that qualify. One other U.S.-based MLS team.
So elsewhere now, the TV ratings are in for the League Cup match between Manchester City and Manchester United. Kartik, the result didn't go your way in that one, but the actual TV viewing number was actually, I thought, really good. It was 274,000 people. That match was on beIN Sports and beIN Sports and Espanol. So that number was combined between those two networks. But for a midweek match, played during office hours, I thought it was decent, especially for a match that beIN Sports definitely put a lot of hard work into the coverage, both pre-match, halftime, and post-match.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Terrible match. It was an awful game.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was League Cup games never really live up to. It's just teams are going through the motions, but they did very well. They got a good rating. That's a really good number for a midweek game on a channel like beIN, which is only in however many homes it's in, 28 million or so. So good number for them.
Yeah, yeah. And actually I enjoyed the coverage that beIN Sports did. So they had, I think they had Gary Bailey, and they had Kay Murray. Post-match, they had Ray Hudson there kind of debating with Gary Bailey, as well as Kay, I think Andres Cordero, and also had the League Cup draw too. So they kind of shared the fifth round draw, who's going to play who, etc. The one thing I thought it was kind of a negative was there was just so much focus on Manchester United. I think pretty much Ray Hudson, especially too, was kind of guilty of this. But it just ended up being kind of a Man United debate for about 10 or 15 minutes post-match and very little insight into City. So, Kartik, moving on, we've got Reader Mailbag, and we've got a few of our listeners who have gone ahead and sent in some questions. So the first one I'll ask you, if you don't mind, and this is from Phil Mansfield, who posted on Facebook. He says, do you guys believe that Fox will ever be able to match NBC in terms of presentation and broadcast quality? Do they need better pundits and analysts?
Well, what a loaded question. Thank you for that, Phil Mansfield. It's a cultural thing, it seems, at Fox. It seems to be, it comes from the top, the way they present, the way they produce games, the angles they use, the talking points they pick, the way they their graphics are loud, their lead-ins, the segments are loud, the way they structure their pre-game shows and post-game shows, their bumper programming. Look, Alexi Lawless was fine on ESPN. He's annoying on Fox. Mm-hmm. Eric Winalda is good, but I think he'd be better on ESPN if he were still on it. He's been gone from ESPN for so long now, it's hard to make that judgment. But I think he'd be better on ESPN. Brian McBride is much better on ESPN now than he was on Fox. I've heard a lot of critiques of Brad Friedel, but I think, again, it's what he has to say. It's kind of the attitude. I like John Strong a lot. I like JP. Mm-hmm. But JP was on ESPN and was probably better when he was on ESPN. Just because it's the way you want to – people who are watching at home want to blame the announcers and say, oh, yeah, John Strong, he's not very good. Maybe they say that. Maybe they don't. But it's the kind of information you're given by your producers. It's what you're being urged to say when the production assistant is in your ear talking about things. It's the kind of the attitude and the tone of the broadcast. And Fox is nowhere near ESPN or NBC in terms of that, in terms of viewing football or soccer as a global sport and trying to present it to a global audience. They're trying to play this USA card, or this very kind of promotion of MLS. ESPN's done some of that in the past too. I think you don't want... Let me get to the brass tacks here with ESPN. Maybe it is the commentators, because I think ESPN, they presented it in a different way, and their production value was better. But I think prior to Taylor Twellman being the co-commentator, they were very much seemingly in the tank also in the kind of the self-promotion face of MLS and U.S. soccer. They've now got a guy that's unafraid, who's seems – at least on the surface, to be much better prepared, much more informed about everything going on in global football, global soccer, and has the perspective of having played both in Major League Soccer and overseas, even though he never got a first-team game at 1860. He's also a player that has played more recently and is not necessarily part of that generation, that pioneering generation of U.S. players that feels some degree of ownership of Major League Soccer and of U.S. soccer and feels very defensive and protective of it. So I think part of ESPN pulling away from Fox has had to do with the selection of Taylor Twellman as their number one guy. Harks was okay. Lawless was okay. Cello Balboa was okay. Winalda was okay. But they were all part of that generation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think he adds something completely different, a different dynamic that they didn't have. So that's ESPN. Now, when you talk about NBC, you're talking about, again, a very informed guy who was not part of that generation, and Kyle Martino, who was able to add just so much to their broadcasts. And I just think... He's savvier in the way he looks at the game, Martino, it seems, and the guys on Fox. But maybe, again, it's production. Maybe it's preparation. Maybe it's the way these networks the tact they take with the broadcast. I think one thing is for sure about Fox. They're very loud. They're very aggressive with the way they broadcast the sport and the types of themes they pursue. And it's interesting, because when I hear Alexi Lawless teaming with John Strong or with JP Della Camera on a Europa League game, he's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But when you then throw him in the studio with Rob Stone, when there's this kind of all this other stuff going on and all these things they're trying to promote, he's not quite as effective. So I would ask Fox to assess how they use their personnel. I think they've got some of the right personnel. I think Lawless has proven he can be very good. Winalda has proven he can be very good. Holden has proven he can be very good. Strong and JP are top-notch commentators. But it's just the production, right? It's the tenor. It's the attitude of the network.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things we can probably do an entire show on Fox. So maybe we will in the future, as well as ESPN and NBC and all of these each individually. I actually think, I mean, probably people kind of think of me as kind of Fox's biggest critic, but I think they've come a long way in certain aspects. There's certain things that they've done that they've improved upon. most of it is kind of just the aesthetics in terms of kind of the production, how things look. But they're still struggling with the same issues. Biggest of all, really, is just it's everything seems to be so rehearsed, so kind of just basically kind of forced and just. I'll give you one example. I don't want to spend too much time on this just because we have some other reader questions, but everything is so rehearsed and almost so scripted, so robotic that during, I think it was the Gladbach against Man City match, the one that was postponed because of the rain, and Fox, between the 2 o'clock Eastern and 2:30 Eastern, was kind of giving their pre-match kind of discussion about the Man City game and who to look out for and what Gladbach would do and this, that, and the other. And they showed on screen, they showed the TV footage of kind of the referees on screen on the pitch, kind of walking around, and basically you could see the visuals. You could see was that they were postponing the game, canceling the game, and said, okay, the game's off, the pitch is flooded, and. But meanwhile, Warren Barton was there, just going through his spiel as far as like what he thought about kind of with this kind of forced narrative about what he thought about this, what he thought about that. Meanwhile, you're listening, hearing Warren Barton going like, "Warren, you should be stop." Or either Rob Stone butt in or Warren Barton kind of pay attention to what you're seeing on the screen. But there's something bigger that's happening here that we should know about, which is basically the game is being cancelled because of a flooded pitch. And sometimes they just lose sight of kind of just the basics. They just it's just, I don't know, it's just, it's one of those frustrating things for me when I watch the pre-match, just because that's part of what I do in terms of being a journalist, kind of covering and analyzing what they do. But it's such a frustrating experience because it's just basically talking heads, and it's kind of a old boys club that just kind of cracking jokes between themselves. It's not funny, it's not really that informative. Yeah. But they have made some improvements. So I would definitely say that they've done some good things, but still, it's still the same type of issues that they've had all along for many, many years.
Well, in fairness to Fox, a couple things on that. One, I agree with you completely, but one, keep in mind Champions League, there is a you don't get to sell that many ads yourself, right? You have inventory from UEFA you have to run. So I think they may cut costs on production, honestly, when it comes to Champions League pregame and postgame shows. Secondly, as far as analysts, we could talk about their talent, Fox, but there is right now only one elite American co-commentator, and that is Taylor Twellman. He's head and shoulders above everyone else. Only one of the networks can have that one guy, because there's one guy. And right now in Britain, in the UK, before he took the Valencia job, there was one guy. It was Gary Neville. There at one time was one guy. It was Andy Gray that was seen at an elite level. Twellman is at that level among our commentators. So it's a little unfair to pick on Fox versus ESPN, because they don't have ESPN has Twellman and Fox doesn't. However, comparing them to NBC is a much fairer fight, and I think we know NBC is much, much further along in how they cover this sport than Fox is.
Definitely, yeah, definitely light years ahead. So the next question is from a follower on Twitter. His name is Ian Jett, and Ian asks, why does Fox make it so difficult to watch FA Cup first round games? They put them on Fox Soccer to Go, which costs more money. And Kotick, I'll answer this one. This one really comes down to the business side of things, and in terms of Fox Sports, so they're dealing with some major brands, whether it's Heineken or Pepsi Cola, you name it. But they're looking for basically kind of these big companies come in and want to buy millions and millions of basically kind of people who've been watching the matches. So millions and millions of impressions, showing the commercials during whether it's Champions League or baseball, World Series, whatever it may be. So from the FA Cup first round, even though for we listeners, many of us are kind of nostalgic and kind of romantic, it's wonderful to watch. The basics are is that, I mean, in terms of the number of viewers to something like that, it might be, even if you put it on FS2, you might get, I don't know, 10,000 people, maybe 20,000 if you're lucky, versus they could run something else, whether it's, NASCAR or college sports or a rerun or something, and get a lot more viewers watching coverage like that, and be able to then fill more impressions to basically kind of to basically sell more advertising. The faster they can sell their advertising, the quicker they can turn around and get more advertisers on board. So it's really kind of more of an economics point of view. I would actually give a hats off to Fox for even showing the first round of the FA Cup. I don't think they've done it much in the past before, but most of the games were on Fox Soccer to Go. So the option was there. And it's something that I think if someone is passionate about the FA Cup first round, at least there's an option to be able to watch it. And I think some of the games were on Fox Soccer Plus too. But anyway, that's my take on it. I think in this regard, I think Fox made the right move and kind of just putting the business first at least, and then still making the games available to those who wanted to watch it either online or on Fox Soccer Plus. And then Kartik, another question from one of our Twitter followers. This is Robert, known as Sunny SoCal Rob 25 on Twitter, and he asks you, why does Fox Sports not cover soccer on those talking head shows? And I think Speak for Yourself and Undisputed, or those types of shows. He says that shows before and after soccer games act like soccer doesn't exist.
Yeah. That was a cultural thing at ESPN too ESPN also for years. When I say ESPN 2, you might think I'm talking about ESPN 2, the network. It's something John Skipper had to correct and had to go in and really kind of push. And I don't know if there's that guy at Fox pushing for soccer on these programs, because unfortunately we live in a world where the general instinct for these American soccer reporters is to avoid mention of this sport and to talk about this sport. Now, they're not in touch with the younger generation of people who are watching the Premier League and who might even be watching Major League Soccer or their local club in NASL or USL. They're not in touch with those folks. They are in a world dominated by American sports kind of jockocracy, so to speak. That was Howard Cosell's word. And I still sense it. This is why, look, I mean, I sympathize with my friends, NASL, and these pro rel people, and everybody who have grievances against Major League Soccer and against U.S. Soccer. However, I don't think soccer fans tearing down other soccer institutions is a good thing in this country, which is why I sometimes rally the MLS's defense, and it's specifically because of things like this. Mm-hmm. Because we can't even get our top league, which is supposedly being run like an American sports league, with all these connected American sports personalities, consistently covered on these shout shows, these sports shout shows. We can't get the fact that Gashi, you know, Albanian international, who of course missed a sitter in the Euros, but scored this spectacular goal last night to lift Colorado through against the LA Galaxy, star-studded team with Gerrard, Ashley Cole, Robbie Keane, Gio DeSantos. If anyone knows anything about the sport, they know those four names. We can't even get that on these shout shows consistently, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's just the dismissiveness of this league and this sport. And half the time when they mention soccer, they want to make fun of soccer. So it's been forced at ESPN, although I think it's been forced with some resentment. Those guys would rather not have to deal with the highlights they get from the Premier League or from wherever. I think it's quite cultural. And this is also – maybe we've done a disservice to ourselves, Chris. This is something we can explore as we go further into this show in the coming weeks. Have we done a disservice by making it that, with the exception of Rob Stone, we don't really have any crossover people doing sports other sports at the networks where soccer is covered? Now, Rebecca Lowe has done some crossover now with Olympic stuff, right? But generally, no. And ESPN, it's all – I mean, nobody on ESPN's soccer team does any other sport.
Yeah, Taylor's done a little bit. So Taylor Twellman's done a few things on ESPN where I think he's done some, like, I don't know, quiz shows or kind of like almost right. Like entertainment types of shows. But Rob Stone's the best example of somebody who's done a lot of crossover, everything from...
Even JP now. JP used to do a lot of hockey. Now yeah. I think he just does soccer games.
Yeah, I think he might still do some hockey, but not as much as he used to. But Rob Stone's probably the best example of where there is a lot of crossover between kind of the bowling and college football and who knows what other sports. Right, he does too. Yeah,
but that's it. And Max. We used to have Max Brader, yeah. Who does college football, does various other things. And Max is good to us. He still talks about West Ham a lot on his Twitter feed, even though he's not doing any soccer now. He occasionally pops in and does soccer, but he'll tweet the West Ham game, so it's at least one mainstream guy or a guy who's become mainstream. who's remembering his origins and supports a team in England. And he's from here in South Florida, from Coral Gables, Argentine-American. But other than that, there really aren't many guys.
Right. Yeah, and with Speak for Yourself and Undisputed, the format of those shows, I can't even see soccer coming up as kind of a topic. It's so NFL-driven and so kind of, whether it's baseball or basketball, you mean if they started talking about soccer, I don't think it'd be that authentic, unless something happened where it was, you mean Hope Solo, Abby Wambach.
You saw what happened when this clown Mike Francesa had to read the promo for NYCFC. I mean, this is what we still face in this country. There are people who live in a soccer bubble, including myself, a lot of times that don't realize that until something like that happens, and we're like, oh my gosh, you know, maybe I shouldn't bash MLS because they face it. They face this hostility, which is, again, maybe that's part of me that clouds my judgment when I say, oh, whatever, if the New York teams got eliminated, at least they'll be in markets where people care about the sport and the team, and the media won't be so hostile. Because the media in Orlando is not as hostile to the sport as the media in New York, and the media in Kansas City is not as hostile to the sport as the media in Los Angeles. I mean, when David Beckham signed, and it's been 10 years or 9 years, when David Beckham signed, there was so much hostility from the local media there. I mean, it was sickening. And there's still people who just mock the whole idea of the Galaxy and this team that plays out in Carson. I hope LAFC is in their face and kind of forces them to change their attitudes since they're going to play downtown. Maybe that's part of it, the Galaxy playing out in the hinterland. But to answer Rob's question, I don't see much hope for that. I think it's generational, and we maybe 10 years from now, as younger people who grew up with this sport and are watching the Spurs games in the morning or the Arsenal games, and then maybe like a local team, maybe they bring that attitude and they're able to push the envelope a bit.
Yeah, and what happens is that because those topics aren't brought up on those types of shows, and Fox really, at least on the television side, doesn't have a soccer news program. What happens is then that when the soccer topics do come up, whether it's Bob Bradley getting signed by Swansea or other similar types of topics, maybe it's Christian Pulisic, that Bob Bradley's probably a good example, but that topic then is rolled over into the Champions League coverage, into the pre-match coverage. And even myself as a Swansea fan, I got kind of upset when they took about 15 to 20 minutes to cover Bob Bradley on a day that should have been pre-match, talking about Champions League, all the great matches coming up.
It's very upsetting. It's very upsetting, though, that Bob Bradley getting this job in the Premier League hasn't gotten the kind of attention in the sports media. And this is, again, another wake-up call to people like me who live in a vacuum, in a bubble, that I thought it was going to be a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And it was among us, among the soccer community. But, boy, I mean, these SportsCenter and these Fox programs, they gave it maybe a mention. It was it's a breakthrough for our country in the biggest sport in the world, in the most watched league, competitive sports league in the world. Mm-hmm. And no one seemed to care at the sports editors and these TV networks. Really sad.
Yeah. And I think part of it, too, it's huge as far as America loves winners. So, if Bob Bradley goes on a run and Swansea all of a sudden start winning 4 or 5 matches in a row, and he turns things around, basically kind of a relegation candidate moving up the table. Maybe then there's more of a kind of a sexy appeal that can translate to some of these other media outlets. But so far, I've been surprised too. And I've seen the same type of thing, Kartik, where I thought there'd be a lot more exposure outside of your NBCs and Foxes, but there hasn't been thus far. So I want to remind listeners to this podcast, too, that if you do have any questions, and it doesn't have to be questions about Fox, it can be questions about anything in regards to TV coverage, online coverage, apps also, or questions about where to watch your soccer, or how to question, or if you need some advice or help, etc. Or even if you're listening to a broadcast and there's some amazing flub or kind of embarrassing flub by the commentators, we've all heard them, anything like that, just feel free to send those in and we'll go ahead and read those out on air or play them on air. You can send them by email to web@worldsoccertalk.com for the email. You can send them on Twitter. We're at world well, actually at W Soccer Talk on Twitter. And last but not least, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. And actually, Kartik, they can also send some stuff to you, too. Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at KKFLA737. I apologize at this moment for the excessive election coverage. We'll get back to a lot more soccer coverage after Tuesday and the occasional election, political, Brexit, historical tweets, all of that stuff. But KKFLA737 on Twitter. You can DM me. My DMs are open, so you can DM me anytime.
So we're going to move on to our last segment of this show, this first show, and it's going to be our featured topic of the week, and that is in regards to falling subscriber numbers. So ESPN, as Kartik mentioned earlier, lost 621,000 subscribers from October to November of 2016. That is their worst month in their company history. ESPN has been losing subscribers big time throughout the year. It's not just this past month. But personally speaking, other than the kind of Major League Soccer and your occasional World Cup qualifiers coming up in the international break, of course, there's Euro 2020 coming up. But ESPN has really kind of dropped back on their coverage or acquisition of TV rights in the soccer business. Fox has definitely taken the majority of big rights available, whether it's World Cups, etc. And I think it's one of those things that, of course, is ESPN FC, The Daily Show, which Kartik, I know you watch avidly, you're a big fan of.
Yeah.
But it is still it's worrying times for ESPN. I think it's sign of the times too. Maybe the beginning of the end. Well, I wouldn't say end, but it's definitely the beginning of kind of the period where we're going to start seeing subscriber numbers continue to drop as people look at
well, that's a lot. Well, that's a huge number for 1 month, and I think when we see a la carte cable come from some cable companies, that's going to come as we have these drops in numbers. And what we talked about at the outset of the show, that close to 50% of cable subscribers, satellite cable subscribers, really the same thing, would want to scale back on their programming once you give a la carte, and ESPN is $32, but all these other channels you like, even the Lifetimes and the Discoveries and the Nat Geos and these channels that the TLC, the channels I tend to watch, History Channel, or you could put them together and pay $32. Well, then you're not going to drop ESPN.
Yeah.
Most people are. And I think that's something they are facing. And Disney has pushed back consistently against any – with their lobbying effort in front of Congress, Disney has been very strongly geared up lobbyist-wise to push back against any move towards a la carte cable pricing with telecoms. But with the Commerce Committee in the House in particular in Washington. But – I think the day is coming at some point, because it's just the industry is taking a dump, and you're in a position where eventually the telecoms, AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, the big ones, those are the big three, especially now that Time Warner could be absorbed into AT&T. You're looking at a real possibility that if they allow that merger, I'm hoping DOJ says no, but we'll see. If as you have these consolidations and these companies are hurting, they are hurting relatively speaking. When you have a basic monopoly like these companies do, you really can't be hurting that much. But I think there's going to be some changes in pricing. So that's bad. NBCSN lost 705,000 subscribers from October to November.
Right. Same time frame. Which is even worse than ESPN. I mean, that's
start with less subscribers than ESPN. So that's
yeah.
That's really bad. FS1 lost 355,000, which is bad also. And then BN Sports lost some, but then they gained some on the Espanol side. And they've been pushing some English language programming to the Espanol side, if you haven't noticed. But I think it's very, very bad for everybody in the industry. I think what you're going to see is more and more illegal streaming pop up.
Well, I think actually that's part of the equation that people haven't really talked much about too. Though I think actually the illegal streaming is already at a place where it's starting to have a huge impact, and that's why we're kind of seeing some of these subscriber numbers going down on the TV side. Yes, people are moving to kind of your Sling TVs and your PlayStation views, etc. But I think what's not been accounted for is the people that are watching illegal streams. And I think we all are aware of it. I mean, to give you an example of how bad it is, just a couple of weeks ago, I was just listening to a local FM talk show, and they had people calling in talking about different movies they had seen, and somebody called in and say, like, well, I just saw, I don't know if it was Suicide Squad or something that was in the movie theaters, and they said, yeah, like, I just watch it at home. I have it on Amazon Fire. I've got this Kodi, and I can just watch it for free. And they were debating on the show, like, well, is that legal or is that not legal? And I'm like, that is illegal. That is not legal. But they had a discussion on the show, and there's just even your average Joe on the street, I think, is familiar with some of the illegal streaming options that are available. And just as we hear about NFL numbers dropping and Premier League numbers dropping in the UK, as well as TV networks numbers that are dropping too, that's the part that people haven't been really talking about is, okay, well, I think personally a large part of this is illegal streaming is having a big impact where people are watching these games, people are watching these programs, but they're watching it illegally. And if they're watching it illegally, Nielsen doesn't know that these people are watching it. They don't have the subscriber counts or the viewing counts. They don't have the subscribers. ESPN's not seeing these numbers. So it's kind of this big black hole, and it's one of those things that... It's whack-a-mole. You mean they're trying to shut things down, but it's getting worse, not better. And I wonder, Kartik, too. I mean, are we seeing kind of is this a sports bubble that's about to burst? Because in terms of the TV industry, because what we're seeing now is that in terms of a lot of these leagues, whether it's NFL or the Premier League too, I mean, it's costing billions for these TV networks to go ahead and acquire their rights. And they're paying years in advance to get these rights, but then I don't think they kind of saw that these subscriber numbers would be dropping so quickly.
Yeah. For ESPN, it's been really the college sports have done it more than everything else. Where the SEC, it's a 10 or 12 year deal. The Pac-12, it's a 10 or 12 year deal. ACC, the new deal is a 10 year deal, 12 year deal, something like that. These deals are longer. MLS had always gone on 3-year deals. All of a sudden, it was an 8-year deal, right? 7 or 8 years. All of this stuff, and that means you're shelling out more cash, and you're contractually tied to this stuff. And there's very little way to kind of defer the costs. And I think what the only solution to this is digital, is online content and ads. Selling ads on ESPN 3, watch ESPN on Sports Go, and then on NBC Live, Sports Live Extra, and these sorts of things that kind of offset some of the costs. I don't know if that happens. At some point, the revenue that the conferences are generating in college football, college basketball, may be so great that they're going to have to defer some of the costs. Maybe they're going to have to handle some of the production for these events. I don't know Major League Soccer what they want to do. So it's a tough time, and I think the bubble very clearly has burst, Chris. It's bursting. Okay, the next set of negotiations for rights are going to be significantly lower. The question is, how do the networks get through this? Because until you get to that next negotiation of rights, you have to survive, and that's the question mark. If they survive to 2022 or 2024, I think costs then are more under control. You have less subscribers, but you're in a more digital model by then, and things will work itself out. But it's these next 4 or 5 years that are really critical in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And I think it's one of those things, too. I think the pressure is on Nielsen, I think, in many regards, because in terms of the way that viewing numbers are calculated, it's not taking into equation, at least not yet, people watching it in bars or kind of watching it in public areas. And on the digital side, too, in terms of watching a typical game or whatever game it is how accurate and how valid are those numbers on the digital side and on kind of the public viewing places? Are they being taken into consideration as those types of numbers increase considerably while the TV numbers are going down? So I think Nielsen kind of needs to have more of a holistic number to kind of be to share. which is going to boost across the board. And at the same time, too, I think dealing with a lot of the illegal streaming issues and hopefully trying to crack down on that to kind of prevent that, because ultimately it hurts the TV networks, ultimately it hurts the leagues and the players in terms of even less TV money coming into the business, which ultimately I think is going to hurt us all. So, Kartik, I think I want to go ahead and kind of wrap things up. I think this was episode one of the World Soccer Talk podcast. It's been a good journey down into the kind of the soccer media space. We've been covering the US quite a bit today, but it doesn't have to be too. So if we have listeners from overseas in the UK or Canada, Australia, you name it, we definitely could talk about topics like that in terms of coverage overseas. Also, if there's certain things that you want to talk about, have us talk about as a feature topic coming up, let us know too. If you like the format or if you don't like the format, please give us some feedback, whether it's on social media or iTunes, the reviews there. And definitely keep the feedback coming, because that's going to help us in terms of understanding what you like and some of the things that you'd like to see or hear from us. And we will be back next week with another episode. And then, Kartik, I want to hand it over to you to say the final words before we say goodbye.
So, everyone, enjoy your football, even though it's an international break.
Cheers.